The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, it must be SEC basketball if we're talking about another controversy. And it must be Tennessee basketball if we're talking about another controversial finish. Last night at the Pavilion in Oxford, the Volunteers were on the road against Ole Miss. The Grant Williams of Tennessee hit a layup to put the Vols up by two. And as Ole Miss had the ball in the final seconds, they went up for the game-winning three, but instead waved off. Didn't matter. I don't know if the guy made it. Anyway, he collided with a Tennessee player, could have gone to the free throw line for three that could have given Ole Miss the victory, but instead the official made the call that it was charging on a last second desperation heave from a couple of feet off the three-point line, but it was charging. Very, very close, bang-bang type of play. Call went Tennessee's way. The Volunteers emerged victorious. Ole Miss felt like they got robbed. Kermit Davis, the head coach of the Rebels, took off his jacket, threw it to the ground, and that somehow signaled the fans in Oxford, Mississippi, to throw trash onto the court at the Pavilion. A very nice place to watch college basketball, by the way. But nevertheless, they threw their trash onto the court in showing the officials, again, a controversial finish in the SEC. That should be a cool slogan. SEC basketball, stay for the controversy. SEC basketball, we don't know how it's going to end. SEC basketball, we'll figure this out later. I mean, there's so many ways you could go with it now. There's so many different ways you could go with the controversy. I don't know. I watched the play. I didn't see the game last night, but I watched the play. It looked too close to call. I always say with officials, if you're going to make a call like that, make it dramatic. Make it so that it's solid, so that you know, you make no question, right? Don't hem and haw. Don't be like, ooh, it could have been a charge or it could have been a foul. It could be free throw. The official who made the charge, as soon as the Ole Miss player runs into the Tennessee player, he blows his whistle and does the charge call immediately. Offensive foul, we're done. Finished. Tennessee, you're going to win the game. So, controversy or not, he was at least very confident in it. Fans, though, chucking trash. Yeah, that's where we're heading now, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This is Toto, Africa, Throwback Thursday, 1983, celebrating the final episode of MASH that aired this week. One of the largest television programs ever. This song still has some panache. It still plays today.
It is.
I hear this on the radio a lot. Well, I don't know why. It's not
band,
a hit.
The band Weezer just released an album where they did all...
did they really?
Like, what do they call it when they do the song?
Covers?
Covers, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just did. They did a whole bunch of covers of 80 songs.
Oh, okay. Is that why?
That, so I'm not really hearing that might this be then? Why. That might be why you're hearing it recently.
Okay.
It also it gets thrown in a lot of TV shows and movies.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's one of those songs kick. That you instantly recognize.
Yeah. So again, we're celebrating the final episode of MASH aired on this date. That's why Throwback Thursday is honoring 1983. So if you got a hit, you know, you can play the hits on this show. Just hit us on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, or at Ron Culver, and that's Ron with two N's. Nick Foles is going to be a free agent. Got me thinking about his place in Philadelphia sports lore as a Philadelphia athlete. And is he the greatest? Is he the greatest sports figure in Philadelphia sports history?
Rocky.
It's hard to say. It could be Rocky, right? Rocky. Philadelphia is a very rich sports
right, but
town.
Isn't it funny that Rocky... is probably their biggest sports icon.
Could be. Why would you have a statue to Rocky when you have, and we're going to go over them, some of the most, you know, iconic figures in sports.
Yeah.
In your city, from your city. And the one you have at the steps of the state house is, or wherever, whatever it is, City Hall or whatever.
No, I think it's in front of one of the art museums.
Oh, it's in front of the art museum. Is that where the steps are?
Yeah.
Is that the steps he was running? Was to the art museum?
Yeah.
I don't know Philadelphia at all. So I went there once. It's very cool. Philadelphia, if you like history, Philadelphia is awesome. But I went there once, so I'm not really sure. But listen, Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl, I looked up some of the greatest Philadelphia sports icons. And some I knew, but some I didn't. I don't know where he ranks, but definitely not on top. Bobby Clark, for example, is a Philadelphia Flyer that has spent his entire career Broad Street Bullies. He also was a four-time All-Star. He helped the Flyers to two Stanley Cups in the 70s. He's the team's general manager. He was also the team's general manager. He's the senior vice president, right? I mean, you want to talk about a Philadelphia guy? That's Bobby Clark, Broad Street Bullies. Mike Schmidt, one of the best third basemen to ever play the game. Helped the Phillies to the 1980 World Series. He was also the MVP of that World Series. He was a 12-time All-Star. So when Phillies' longtime baseball franchise, winning a championship in 1980, one of their best players, Mike Schmidt, spent his entire career with Philadelphia. He leads the franchise in a number of statistical categories, retired his number. He's inducted into the Hall of Fame. But you know who the number one Philadelphia athlete of all time is? And it's by a mile, by the way. Is Wilt Chamberlain from Philadelphia, played with the Philadelphia Warriors and the 76ers, scored 100 points while playing in Philadelphia, playing against Hershey. I think the game was in Hershey when he did.
And unfortunately, not televised.
Not televised, that's right. He's responsible for some of the most dominating offensive performances in NBA history. Again, he was in Hershey Arena against the Knicks when he scored 100 in 1962. On this date, one of the anniversaries on this is him scoring. He had 35 made field goals in a game. Like, that's insane. He made 35 buckets.
Wasn't it 35 straight?
Yeah, 35 straight,
that's,
right.
That's where...
It's insane.
Yeah.
Two-time NBA championship, won it with the Sixers in 1967. He's one of the greatest basketball players of all time. He's from Philadelphia. Is the other thing. Not only did he play for Philadelphia in both the 76ers and the Warriors, he's from Philadelphia. So, and not only that, Dr. J, 1982.
He was a good player.
Dr. J in 1982 helped the Sixers get to the NBA Finals where they lost to the Lakers. Then in 1983, they picked up Moses Malone. And that was the famous faux season where they only lost one game. Malone predicted that they would go 4-4-4 and win the NBA championship. They lost one game, that was to Milwaukee. They swept the Lakers in the 83 finals. They were going for 70 wins in a season. Then they disappeared. But nevertheless, they gave the city of Philadelphia a championship down Broad Street. Dr. J. So Nick Foles winning an MVP in the Super Bowl and giving the city of Philadelphia a Super Bowl is a fantastic accomplishment. But, you know, is he Bobby Clark? Is he Mike Schmidt? Is he Dr. J? And he's absolutely not Wilt Chamberlain, by a mile. But where would he be? Where would he be? Where would he be? Four, three? Is he better? Does winning the Super Bowl mean more than two Stanley Cup championships?
To be honest with you, I know we make light of it, but he is an icon there. I would slot him right just below Rocky.
Right below Rocky.
And, I mean, it's just funny to me because I know Rocky was a character in a movie, but it does. It's Philadelphia wrapped up.
It's totally Philadelphia.
You know, it's an iconic. It's what Philadelphia. It's who they. It's the best way to describe who Philadelphia is or was.
Rocky is such a brilliant movie because it's not only a sports movie, it is a love story, so it appeals to both genders. It's got, you know, the Adrian angle, and then it's got the sports angle. But it's a brilliant movie. And the you know, obviously got a little weird with the going to Russia and all that stuff. But the first one
is
still...
The first one, I mean, it deservedly won an Oscar.
I think the second one is very, very good. The third one's weird with Mr. T, and the fourth one.
Yeah,
but
the third one gave us all the sound bites.
Yeah, the third one. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, woman,
be with a real man. Yeah. And he runs out to take on Clubber Lang. Yeah, exactly. There's a famous like a meme of Rocky, like what Rocky looked like in Rocky, and then what he looked like in Rocky III. It's like when Stallone got really buff and really, you know, really got all Hollywood. It's like two different people. It's really crazy. But again, back to Nick Foles. I think he's got a place in Philadelphia history. I don't think he's that iconic. His accomplishment is major. It's major. Winning a football championship in Philadelphia is a big, big deal. That's a big football town. That's a big Eagles town, right? You know, you talk to these cities. What are you? Are you a baseball town? Are you a football town? Most cities in America that have an NFL team are football town. Most of them are. Philadelphia is. Philly's a longtime franchise. Hockey's big there, but it's an Eagles town. So winning a Super Bowl for the Eagles would put you on an upper echelon, but he's not an all-time Eagle, right? I mean, he's not like a Mike Schmidt. He's not like a Bobby Clark. He didn't spend his whole career there. He you know, it's a great story. He's a backup, but... You know, it's...
Yeah, but based on that, would you say he's even at the top Eagles?
Chuck Mednarik could be... You could put Chuck Mednarik on top of that list.
No, Donovan McNabb?
No. He's bigger than McNabb.
You think so?
He won a Super Bowl.
Well, I get that he won a Super Bowl, but...
He's not only won a Super Bowl, he beat the Patriots, he was the MVP. Donovan McNabb is a good player, but man, winning a Super Bowl that's the... icing on your cake.
All right, Reggie White.
That's a good question. That's a good one. Reggie White.
Because, I mean, Reggie White, he never
Harold Carmichael. Wilbur Montgomery. Chuck Mednarik won a championship back with the Eagles in the pre-Super Bowl era.
Yeah.
Chuck Mednarik famously, there's a famous story about Chuck Mednarik. Many of you probably know this. He hit Frank Gifford so hard, people thought Gifford died. So there's a famous story.
I think them Frank Gifford did for a bit.
I think he might have. There's a famous story about Chuck Mednarik. He hit Frank Gifford so hard. I might butcher this. I hope I don't because it's really good. So they took Frank Gifford in the back, into the bowels of the stadium. I think it was Franklin Field in Philadelphia. And they took him into the stadium. But in that game, somebody did die. A fan died, right? And so he had a heart attack, and they took him, and he was on a gurney with a you know, blanket over him, a, you know, sheet over him, as they were waiting for the paramedics to come to pick him up. And when the players passed the gurney, they thought it was Gifford because Bednarik hit him so hard and took him out of the game. That's a pretty good story. That's pretty awesome. The players thought, oh my God, Frank is dead. Like, he got hit so hard, he's dead.
Well, you know, I mean, and if you look back on it, if you were to Google that play, if you just Google Chuck Mednarik, Frank Gifford, the photo will pop up. And
yeah.
It's the photo of football.
It's wild.
Where it looks like Chuck Mednarik just, you know, jumping up, his hands like at his chin, and it almost looks like he's getting ready to punch Frank Gifford one more time, even though Frank Gifford sprawled on the ground.
Yeah. The Eagles won championships in 48, 49, and 60, and I think he helped them win the 60 championship.
Yeah, the problem I have is that it's I know Nick Foles brought them a Super Bowl, but it's just hard to say that he's. I mean, he'll live in.
He doesn't feel eagle-ish.
No, he doesn't. That's the problem.
You know, but maybe people in Philadelphia feel differently about that. Maybe people
I'm sure
in Philadelphia
they do.
Are like, you know, you don't have to have been here. Like, listen, you don't have to. We don't look at you just because you haven't been here as long as Mike Schmidt or. Again, Bobby Clark.
It doesn't mean you can't
be on the higher echelon of where we view our athletes.
Right, but I don't know if he's even if he even falls into the top 10 of Philadelphia.
I don't either.
And that's what's bizarre.
I would love somebody from Philadelphia to kind of give me an idea of where Nick Foles fits.
Because I mean, I found a list, and I'm just going over a list briefly. You got Iverson.
Iverson, yeah.
You got Joe Frazier.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we totally missed out on that, right?
You know,
I mean, Joe Frazier.
Going the Wayback Machine, Jimmy Fox, Philadelphia Athletics.
I mean, you're talking about an old city, like a Revolutionary War city.
Charles Barkley.
It's been around a while. Barkley, yeah. Barkley. God, I wish Barkley had won a title with the Sixers. It would change my view of him there.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, you said Moses Malone. Let's see who else.
Best opportunity was with the Suns. So...
Looking
I think
at some
I brought a couple
here.
Of others.
But yeah, I just don't know if he falls in the top 10.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would like to think he does, but I don't know.
But Will Chamberlain is one, right? Like, Will Chamberlain is definitely number one on the list.
On this one, they had number one as Bobby Clark.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. No, that makes sense. Listen, Bobby Clark has everything. If you're talking about a city, Bobby Clark has everything you're looking for, right? He was there a long time. He was in the front office. He's still with the organization. He personifies Flyers hockey. He won a championship. He's part of a kind of one of the iconic groups in NHL history, the Broad Street Bullies. He's part of that, right? So there's all of that. But like in Denver, for example, because the only reference that I could come up with because having spent some time there, Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl. John Elway's the iconic Bronco, right? It's not the same because Elway won two, but even if Elway had won one, the longevity gives you a little bit more taste.
Right. I think
Foles,
even if Elway
came one and left, right? Like he's going to leave. He's going to go somewhere else now.
Right. I think even if Elway didn't win any,
he still is the iconic Bronco.
So he would be the, I mean, I'll say the icon of Denver.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, sure. Over, I mean, because baseball, I mean, that team is still relatively new, but I put them over, you know,
all right, coming,
team still, you know, all the, they have a, Denver has a lot of new sports.
Yeah. Coming up, I want to bring this up for another city, though, and in conversation in this regard, because I find this fascinating. Nick Foles, obviously, free agent, going to go help somebody else win and possibly win a title. But where does he fit in Philadelphia history? Because Philadelphia's got a rich tradition. There's another city that has it as well, and they've been struggling where to put their current iconic athletes. We'll talk about that coming up next on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, don't take a chance on being stranded. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and get your battery tested. It's free of charge, and one of the many services available. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find the exact battery for your car or truck. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better price every day. Is this, oh God, I don't know. I don't know this one. I want to take a guess. Is this the Commissars? Something like that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The song is Dirt Commissar, the band After the Fire.
What? Wow. After, I wouldn't have guessed the group
no.
at all, but that's the hook. The hook. I remember. God. 83. We're celebrating 1983. Who won championships in 83? I can tell you a couple. I will tell you a couple. The 1983 World Series was won by the Baltimore Orioles. The 1983 Super Bowl. You want to go January 83 or you want to go the season of 83?
Let's go January of 83 just because that would lead into, you know,
right, to what we're doing now.
MASH would have been going up.
January of 83.
been the 82 season.
I'm
going to
say it was the 82 season. That is going to be the Dolphins versus the Redskins versus the Dolphins. And that was the strike shortened year. And that was Theismann and the Redskins winning Super Bowl 17. So Orioles win the World Series. The 83 NBA champions were the Philadelphia 76ers. And the 83 NHL champions were the Oilers, because I'm just taking a random guess that it was probably them or the Islanders. I don't know. I have no idea.
Are you just throwing it out that maybe Gretzky won?
Maybe Gretzky won.
Or
I do remember the Islanders winning four straight. I have no idea what years they won four straight. Might have been in the early 80s, and they might have been the Stanley Cup champions at that point. Wimbledon was probably won by McEnroe or Connors. Take your pick. Or Bjorn Borg, for all I know. The Masters in 83 was won by, let me think about this one. I have no idea. Masters of 83. Tom Watson, maybe. Seve Ballesteros, maybe. I don't know. So there you go, 1983, celebrate the MASH. All right, so remember we were talking about Nick Foles and where he fits in the pantheon of Eagles athletes? All right, Bobby Clark, Wilt Chamberlain, Chuck Pignarik, Mike Schmidt. Am I missing one? Rocky Balboa. Joe Frazier was a good one. That was a good pickup. One I missed on the Philadelphia research. But you know who else, like when it's funny when you talk to people in New England, right? Boston, about Tom Brady, greatest of all time. There are some people who cling on to, like, who's the best New England Boston athlete of all time? An all time, right? There are people who say, oh, no, not even close. Bill Russell. It's Bill Russell by a mile. And you're like, nah, modern day NFL, six Super Bowl championships. Nope, 11 titles for Bill Russell and the Celtics. Bill Russell, people will say Bill Russell. It's a generational thing, I get it.
Yep.
But you talk about a rich history. And by the way, here's the other factor in this, and I'm going to try to describe it. And I hope I don't miss in this, because it's a little difficult to describe. There are some athletes, because of their association with the franchise, or because they're from that area, or because maybe they're not from that area, but they've spent so long there that they're associated with that and they become part of the city and kind of the fabric. Think Elway in the Broncos. Think Elway, Colorado. He didn't grow up in Denver, but he's Mr. Colorado. And you can find that in a lot of athletes. Does Tom Brady give you any indication that he's Boston? That he's New England? I would say absolutely not. He's as far from New England in terms of his personality and he's more Los Angeles than he is Boston, right? Now, Bobby Orr is Boston. Like, Bobby Orr is Boston. Larry Bird grew up in French Lake. Larry Bird said in the championship parade in 1981, he said there was only one other place he'd rather be, and that was French Lick, Indiana. And yet, still has a Boston feel to it. Yeah, people in Indiana would disagree. They say, no, he's still Indiana to us. But nevertheless, Brady doesn't bring Boston in. Doesn't feel Boston. But does it matter? No, it doesn't matter. To the people of Boston, it doesn't matter. But he doesn't feel like Mike Schmidt, Philadelphia. Nick Foles doesn't have that. Bobby Clark, Philadelphia, he doesn't have that, right? Just because of the longevity and the association and just the history. Brady should. He should feel like he's part of the Chowda crowd, right? But he's never going to be. He's married
example.
A supermodel, lives in a house with a moat.
I think a perfect example. I mean, because it's just, you know, that's just modern day. You know, they live these lives that we can only dream about. But I get the feeling that David Ortiz is more Boston than Tom Brady.
Yeah, very much so. Very, very much
and
so.
He's, exactly. He's a beloved icon, obviously brought in, World Series rings. But you know, yeah, he didn't bring in six Super Bowl titles and going down as the greatest quarterback to ever played the game.
Yeah.
You know, Ortiz isn't in that stature. He's not. We're never going to look at him as, you know, do you think we put him in the top 50?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make light of it, but really, is David Ortiz in the top 50 of all-time baseball players? Because there's such a rich history.
No.
There.
No.
But, in Boston, I feel he's more an iconic figure in Boston than Tom Brady is.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree with that. There, listen, when the Boston bombings happened, right, during the marathon, this is one of the reasons I thought David Ortiz should have been the sports person of the year in 2013, because there was the city was looking for some spokesperson, if you will. And because Patriots Day, the Boston season, David Ortiz was the perfect person for that. And he capped he bookended the year with the championship and played very well in the World Series and in the postseason for that championship. But he said everything that Bostonians were thinking. Now, Brady could have made that speech, too. Don't get me wrong. Brady could have made that speech. But there is an authentic feel with some athletes and their relationship to the city that I don't think Brady has with Boston, that I just don't feel like he has with New England. Again, it's not that he's not beloved. That's not the angle I'm taking here. But I think a lot of you out there can think of cities, your favorite team, your favorite cities, and who exemplifies that area better. A lot of it's just because that player lived there forever, is part of that community. When I heard about a high rise in San Francisco and I heard Joe Montana lived there, I went, oh yeah, of course he does. He could have lived anywhere, but that's the way I thought about it. All right, Jerry Palm is going to come up next. We'll talk to him about college basketball, where we stand as we get into March next.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on SB Nation Radio. Jerry Palm joins us. Talk some college basketball. How are you, Jerry?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I want to talk about Tennessee. I want to because this is a basketball team that was number one in the country. Now they've struggled a little bit. They're getting into some close games now in conference play. Is there something about the Volunteers that was going well that's not particularly going well, and how do you view the Vols today?
I think the main thing is it's February, and everybody seems to be having doldrums this time of year. You know, the March is almost there. You kind of can't wait for it to get there. I think you see this in a lot of sports, you know, where there's just you get near the end or maybe in the middle of a season, I think like August in baseball, where the grind starts to get to you a little bit, and it also in Tennessee's case, the schedule's gotten better. They've played three tournament teams now in their last four games. Kentucky, LSU, Mississippi are going to get Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Auburn after this, so the schedule's ratcheted up a little on them too.
Do they still have the look of a championship level team?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. It's a team that has got a lot of veteran guys. They know what to do. They know how to play together. They don't really need a lot of hand-holding to get out of trouble. Sometimes in a game, when you've got a younger team, you're going to call a timeout. And some coaches will call timeouts in a little bit of a lull anyway. And Rick Barnes has the luxury of letting these guys sort of play through it because they can. So, I think the talent is there. The coaching is there. They're good enough to make a run to the Final Four.
All right, we know about Duke, and we know about Duke without Zion Williamson, and they can't replace Zion Williamson, but when you watch Duke without him, what is it that they're missing? What aspect of the game is so out of where the Duke Blue Devils are without him on the court?
Well, I don't think their post presence is as good. I mean, that's clearly where he can dominate. Of course, he does a lot of things, but I also think their defense isn't as good without him out there. They're a pretty good defensive team when he plays, but, he's a guy that makes a makes problems for you on both ends of the floor, and I think the defense has suffered a little bit, but also, they've become more perimeter-oriented team, and that is not their strength when he's not there.
Let me give you a read on Texas Tech, because now they've been playing some good basketball lately, but they've been moving up in the rankings. The Red Raiders, Jared Culver, give me an idea on the Red Raiders and how good this team is going into March.
Yeah, I saw them live once. They got annihilated at Kansas. So they probably don't want to see me anymore. They're a very good team. Got to have a chance to break Kansas's streak of winning conference championships that they and Kansas State share the lead now with Kansas a game back. And, they haven't had a bad loss all year. I mean, nothing really to say, oh, my gosh, what's wrong with this team? They've beaten just about everybody in conference that they've, had a chance to play so far. They don't have a big non-conference win, really. But they've had a really good season, and they are what they usually are, an outstanding defensive team with enough offensive pieces to be dangerous.
Jerry, when you look at the field, and again, obviously it's different than in football where we just have a very limited number of teams that could win a national championship. Basketball is different because of the tournament. But in terms of championship quality teams, how deep do you see this current group of teams?
I would probably say the teams that I have as ones and twos on my bracket, so those eight, I think you can legitimately make a case for that doesn't require, you know, a little bit of luck or something like that.
Right.
Or, you know, an especially good performance. But there are teams like, you know, I'm not including LSU in that, but they're probably capable. Texas Tech could make that kind of a run. Marquette, Purdue. Marquette and Purdue have got, you know, one guy that can carry a team. I mean, he can't win a game by himself in the NCAA tournament, but they're so good that they can lift everybody up, and you can make a deep run on the back of a guy like Marcus Howard or Carson Edwards.
Jerry Palm joins us, CBS Sports, talking some college basketball. Always the question about the mid-majors going into Selection Sunday, and how are the mid-majors looking in terms of going into this season?
Well, I guess it depends on – I don't use that term because I think it's too vaguely defined, mid-major. But you consider Gonzaga a mid-major, and they're a national championship contender. That's probably not who you're talking about. You're probably talking about Buffalo and Wofford.
Yeah, you know, I'm leaning towards there, Jerry. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, Belmont and Wofford, I think, are likely at-large teams if they don't win their conference. So those are potential bid stealer situations. Belmont, Lipscomb, maybe Furman, I think have to have a very small margin for error if they are going to make a case to be an at-large team. And I think Furman has got maybe the best case of those teams because of their win at Villanova in non-conference play. If they can avoid another bad loss, they might have a shot. But their overall strength of schedule is not that great. So that could end up working against them.
How good are the Houston Cougars right now? Moving at 8, the one loss in the season, climbing up the rankings with a bullet. How good is Houston?
Well, good enough that I'm mad at myself for neglecting to mention them before. Uh-huh. When we were talking about you know, potential Final Four teams. That's an outstanding basketball team. They beat LSU. That's their marquee win. But they're in a good league, and they're just running roughshod through it. You know, it's a team that could be a 2 or a 3 seed, especially, I mean, if they finish with just the one loss. I don't think a 1 is in play. I just think the competition at the top of the bracket is too good, given their schedule compared to others. But it's a really good team.
Which conference, Jerry, do you find most intriguing? It doesn't have to be good quality teams. It can be attrition. It can be anything that you have found almost daily, wondering how it's going to play out, bubble teams, et cetera. Bring it all together. Which conference is most intriguing?
Well, to me, it's the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten tournament could legitimately be won by 11 or 12 of the 14 teams.
Wow.
And because you look at the teams that had been at the bottom, Penn State, playing well, Illinois playing well, even though they lost to Purdue last night. I mean, those are teams near the bottom of the standings. I mean, Northwestern probably can't put 4 in a row together. Might be asking too much of Rutgers. Indiana has the talent and played, you know, tournament quality basketball for 2 months before they tanked. But if they get going in the right direction again, their talent, they could win the Big Ten tournament. I mean, it's that league has had more ranked teams lose to unranked teams than any other league, and it's because the depth of the Big Ten is the best. And I've almost never seen in a major conference, but certainly in the 30-some years I've been following the Big Ten. And everybody can beat you at their place, but they can also beat you at your place, and that's not something you can usually say about the bottom of most leagues.
Jerry, in terms of I get it. Sometimes conferences are up and conferences are down. It's kind of the nature of the beast. Some conferences stay up for a long time. What happened to the Pac-12? Why is there only one good team and a bunch of
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that part of it, I would say that just the talent on the floor isn't quite there. Some of it just because they haven't recruited well enough. Some of it is because they haven't coached the players well enough. I mean, I think UCLA's entire starting five is top 50 recruits, but they can't play together. And you know, now they're on their second coach trying to figure it out, and they're not figuring it out. Oregon lost Bol Bol, and that obviously derailed their season. But I just, you know, Arizona State has got a lot of talent and is inconsistent. they beat, you know, Kansas, they beat Mississippi State, and they lose at home to Washington State by 21 in Princeton. You know, that team's a sleeper in the tournament if they play like they want to play. Arizona State can be pretty damaging, and of course Washington leading the league but didn't get the big non-conference win.
How deep is the Southeastern Conference, the SEC? I mean, three teams at the top, and then Ole Miss is playing well. Florida's turned it around. Mississippi State's pretty good. How deep do you see the SEC?
You've got three, Final Four contenders. Both Mississippi schools are solidly in the tournament. Florida, like you said, playing better. Alabama, Auburn, maybe Arkansas if they make a late run. Boy, they could have really stood that win last night. But
yes.
Auburn and Alabama and Florida are the iffiest to me in terms of making the tournament. But this could be a 7 or 8 bid league.
It's weird because South Carolina played really good in the conference, but outside the conference, they were terrible.
Yeah, and that's why they pretty much, I mean, they're now, I think, a 500 team. So they basically have to win the conference tournament. But that's, your entire season matters. The committee will not care what South Carolina did in their conference separately from what they've done everywhere else.
Gonzaga, is this a better Gonzaga team? We've seen Gonzaga good. Is this a better Gonzaga team than the years past? About the same? How do you see the Bulldogs?
It could be one of their best. It's hard to say because we haven't seen them play anybody since December. They lost to Tennessee in Maui. They lost at North Carolina. They did beat Washington at home. That's the only team that's played them at home of any substance. And then, of course, they're the only team to beat full-strength Duke this year. And they're laying absolute waste to the West Coast Conference. So, yeah, I think it's a really good team. We're going to have to see what happens when they get in the tournament and start facing stiffer competition again.
So who are the bubble teams you're watching in the next week or two as the regular season winds down?
Oh, gosh, I watch all of them.
Yeah, of course you do. That's right. Give me like two or three that maybe I should be paying attention to.
Well, I think one that's pretty interesting to me is UCF, Central Florida. They won at South Florida last night. That's actually their best win of the season. They beat Alabama at home. They beat Temple at home in conference play. But their schedule at the end of this season is ridiculous. They were on the road at South Florida last night. Now they go to Houston. Then they get Cincinnati at home. Then they go to Temple. So they've got four games at the end of the season that they might not be favored in any of them. They've already won one of them. But if you're down there right on the cut line of the bracket, man, that's a schedule that could push you over the edge or push you pretty far up the bracket if you're able to knock out a couple of those teams.
Jerry, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll probably catch up with you soon. I know it's a busy time for you, but I appreciate the time you give us anyway.
All right, thank you.
You got it. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, joining us to talk some college basketball. Interesting. It's getting closer and closer. Regular season is going to end in about a week or so. And then we get into the conference tournaments. I always like conference tournament week. It's fun. I hate the idea that if you're Wofford, right? And Wofford's a little different because they're a top 25 team. So let me break that off. Let me go with somebody else. Let me go with let's go with Vermont. Okay. Like if you're Vermont and you're leading the America East Conference and you're playing pretty good basketball, 22-6 overall, right? And you don't win the America East Conference. You're leading it right now, but you don't win. Let's say the Hartford Hawks win. I always hate the fact that they get the bid and you don't. I kind of, you want to bet, you want to get teams rewarded for the regular season. But you know what happens when you do that? You lose a lot of the selling point of the conference tournament in the first place. Some of these, like the SEC, for example, is in Nashville. It's filled with Kentucky fans, regardless if a berth was on the line or not. Kentucky's going. But if you go to these other conferences where, hey, the winner gets this really great prize. Yeah, it might be an early first round exit, but it's a really cool prize. And that's what we're all playing for. That's a selling point. If you're living in an area and the America East Conference Championship is in your town and tickets are affordable, you're looking for some good entertainment value. Yeah, all right. I'll go see some of these teams. But if you said going into the tournament, hey, this is just for a trophy, the bid for the NCAA tournament, that's already set because we played a long season since November and we figured it out. It doesn't sell. It doesn't pop, right? you know, again, a lot of these major conferences, the berth is already in, right? I mean, you can make a run if you're a team that's really on the bubble. You can make a run and really showcase yourself. But, you know, if you're Duke, you don't have to win the ACC to get in. If you're North Carolina, you don't have to. You know, Houston doesn't have to win the AAC to get in, right? But some of these teams have had great years, didn't win their conference tournament, playing in the NIT. Yeah, that's just the way it goes. All right, SB Nation Radio, it's SB Nation AM.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this is Dexy's Midnight Runners. This is Come On Eileen. This is probably the biggest hit of 83 on Throwback Thursday.
One of them.
Well, Billie Jean was probably the biggest hit. This was a big hit.
Strange video.
They were in overalls.
Everyone was in overalls. Everyone wears overalls.
And I remember the VH1 used to have pop-up video where they would show you little nuggets from the video. Apparently, this guy, the lead singer, was not a very nice person during the shoot of this video. So pop-up video had like different anecdotes about him getting angry at lighting and angry at this and angry at that.
Should have been angry at those overalls.
And the overalls were terrible, terrible. Oh, by the way, last night for dinner, I was eating some mashed potatoes. I had the Bob Evans mashed potatoes. You know the ones?
You
put them in the microwave. They're so good. So we had the meat and the potatoes. And I don't know how we had leftover potatoes. I literally took the box, the container, and I was eating it while I was watching television. It was so good.
No, I'm a mashed potato junkie. Finest.
It's wonderful. So we scooped it out for the kids on the plate, you know, and there was enough left over. And then after dinner, I grabbed a spoon like I was eating ice cream. Like I was eating these delicious mashed potatoes. They were so good.
Well, you can convince yourself that it's vanilla ice cream at that point, right?
Oh, my God. It was great. So I was sitting watching TV. The rest of the mashed potatoes. Oh, fast. We had the garlic mashed potatoes because that's my favorite. I like the garlic. And so I just finished up the whole. At one point, I said, I'm done. I'm going to finish this whole thing. I'm just gonna take it right to the trash. I'm going to throw it away when it's done because I'm going to clean out this whole container. This is great.
Well, once you're committed.
Well, exactly.
Once you're committed, you got to go for it all.
Well, my wife. I said to my wife, "Do you think this is weird?" And she says, "Well, no, I do. I could do it with their macaroni and cheese." So I said, "Well, go pick up some macaroni and cheese. Let's see if you'll actually do that." So now I can't wait.
Yeah, but she won't finish the container.
No. I'm going to have some, and the kids are going to have some. But if she polishes off the container, I'll be shocked. But it was really, really, really good. I just put it in the microwave, and it was done. And then whooped it down. It was fantastic. SB Nation Radio.